Hey, Chris.
Hey, Halima.
So we're doing a pilot for WPR. It's called Entertain Us, and we have an hour to do our thing. So what exactly is our thing?
That's a great question. I know for sure that I want to have some laughs.
Okay, so I think Esteban Tuma can help us with that. He's a comedian from Madison, and he'll share his thoughts on marriage and the TSA.
We'll also talk with a TV critic about the Netflix hit Stranger Things, which I'm not so sure about. I just can't do scary.
There's a lot more going on than just the scary stuff, Chris.
Yeah, well, I can't see those things when I have my eyes closed.
We'll get some life advice from Milwaukee singer Lex Allen. He's gotten pretty personal with his music lately.
I also offer Lex a job at WPR, which I definitely don't have the authorization to do, so stay tuned.
First, we have the Found Footage Festival's Nick Prewer, who clearly loves a good prank.
Yeah, I've been checking out this guy a little bit on social media before this interview. There's a lot going on here. I kind of want to know more about this guy.
Well, thankfully, he's on the phone with us right now.
Well, great. Hey, Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, I think a lot of people are familiar with your work with the Found Footage Festival. I know that's kind of how I was initially introduced to you. And yeah, you're out in California. You say you're on the road a lot. I know you live in New York, but you do make it a point to get to your hometown of Stoughton, Wisconsin a lot. What keeps bringing you back here? What do you love about it?
Well, my parents are there, for one, so I'm always back. But I am so grateful that I grew up in a fairly small town because there just wasn't a lot to do. Mm-hmm. And so we had to kind of make our own entertainment. And you know, I just think if I grew up in California or New York or something, I would just constantly be occupied and wouldn't have any time to think of dumb ideas.
Yeah, and that desire to kind of find something to do in your hometown is sort of where the idea for the Found Footage Festival came from, wasn't it?
Yeah, we the co-founder of the festival, Joe, and I both grew up in Stoughton, and I was working at McDonald's there and found a training video. A buddy of mine was training to become a manager and had to watch like 30 different VHS training videos. So he showed me one called Inside and Outside Custodial Duties, which was a training video for
That's
McDonald's janitors. They tried to have a plot to it where there's this crew trainer, and she's training in this dopey janitorial trainee. It's his first day on the job, and he just can't wait to clean the garbage out and clean the bathrooms. And she says if he cleans really hard, he could hope to one day see Mick C.
Before we get started, Chris, do you have any questions?
Yes. What's a Mick C?
I'm sorry. That's McDonald's language. We call the custodian the Mick C because, well, there's clean. And then there's McDonald's clean.
And maybe it's just me, but I sense some palpable sexual tension between the crew trainer and the trainee. And it was just so weird that we would have friends over to watch this video, you know, a Friday night in Stoughton in my parents' basement. We'd pop in Mick C, and that sort of spurred us into thinking, man, if there's videos this ridiculous right under our noses, you know, imagine what else is out there.
I'm hearing that, like, the secret to creative genius is absolute boredom.
True. I think a lot of the best ideas are born out of being totally bored and not having a driver's license. And so that was where our formative years were. And, you know, I think that's where a lot of the ideas came from.
And it seems like, too, that this idea of being bored and great ideas coming out of that probably led a lot of people back in like the 70s and 80s to pick up a video camera and really experimenting and anything goes on camera.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, especially after Jane Fonda's Workout hit big in, you know, 1982, that was like a million seller. So it was the gold rush. Mm. You know, all these mom and pop producers got on board trying to come up with the next best thing and home video, you know, straight to video releases. And so you got all sorts of weird experimental things. Like we found a video called How to Identify Machine-Made Marbles. Like that.
Very specific.
What?
Yeah, it was deemed worthy that there be an audience for a video that specific. So,
what is a machine-made marble, and how do I identify that?
Well, I have a 60-minute video that'll give you all the answers you're looking for. 60 minutes.
Well, and we've got a couple of clips here from some videos from the Found Footage Festival. Here's one that's, gosh, this has got to be one of my personal favorites. This is the Rent a Friend video. I think we've got that audio here to play.
Hi. I'm Sam, and basically I'm here because I want to be your friend. What's your name?
Chris.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about you now. Like, where are you from?
Well, I'm from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm...
That's a nice part of the country. You know, was your mother overprotective by any chance?
This turned into therapy really
quick.
Yeah, it
did.
Watch this.
I'm watching.
Whoa. It's like I have a rubber nose. I used to make this noise. It's a noise that means I'm very excited and very, very happy. And I'd like to do it for you right now.
What is happening? This feels like a really uncomfortable date.
What did we just hear, Nick? Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, Rent-A-Friend is, by the way, we've since met Rent-A-Friend, and he made that noise for us. So I can die happy. check that one off the bucket list. The video was made in 1987, and I think this was around the time that, like, video fireplaces were coming out and VCR games were, you know, they're sort of interactive. And so his idea is, well, there's a lot of lonely people out there. Maybe we should just have a virtual friend. So, yeah, he, for 45 minutes, extemporaneously talked to you as if he was your friend and probably revealed a little too much. about 10 minutes in, it gets past small talk and gets into some pretty heavy stuff. So, but it's just this very strange relic of that time. And I guess it didn't sell that well, but I'm happy we found it.
Well, and here's one more clip. It's a rock and roll vocal instructional video from the bassist from everybody's favorite band, Vanilla Fudge.
You now have enough breath literally for the next 20 seconds. Shall I demonstrate it? Okay.
May.
A little too much breath.
May.
Try this. May. Give me a may.
May.
All right, so I feel like I'm now ready to sing rock and roll music. What's the story behind this one, Nick?
Yeah, this is a video called Rock Vocals. It's an instructional video, and I love that people on public radio just had to hear that. There's something that really
is.
They're waiting for Wait, Don't Tell Me to come on, and they had to listen to that. So this guy Tim Bogert, whose hair looks a little bit like cotton candy, very wispy, and he's there wearing a lot of denim and instructing students on how to get better breath, how to do better vocals. And we find a lot of vocal instructional videos, and they're all funny. There's just something very funny about making those noises.
In preparing for this interview, I sort of did what anyone would do for a good first date, and I kind of looked at your social media presence and checked out what you got going on there.
I'm flattered.
Thank you. You've got a kind of an interesting tradition that you've got going on with your mom. You dress her in heavy metal T-shirts.
Yeah, I think this was just I don't know. I was bored, and I think my mom is such a Wisconsin mom. You know, if she likes music at all, it's like Josh Groban or Mannheim Steamroller Christmas. You know, that's sort of her musical taste. She is not a heavy metal person at all. So I just had an image of my mom wearing the Metallica shirt that terrified me when kids wore it in middle school, which is a knife sticking out of a toilet.
Wow.
And I was like, that would be really funny to see my mom wearing that, like, in our backyard watering plants or something. So I found the T-shirt at a thrift store or a vintage shop somewhere and brought it home. And my mom is nothing if not a good sport. So since then, she's posed, you know, with her crossword puzzle and a Cannibal Corpse T-shirt.
Oh my God.
The more morbid, the better. I'll dress her up in. And so now she said she occasionally gets recognized as the metal mom around town. So that really amuses me.
How was that first conversation with your mom? Was she like, Nick, this shirt is too edgy for me?
No, it's more about the fit. It's more about like, ooh, this one's a little bit tight, you know. Can you get a more flattering angle? But no, I think I've always involved my mom in dumb things like this. So she's used to it. This is old hat for her now.
One thing that you also do is you, I understand, print out fake fruit stickers and take them to the grocery store, put them on the fruit in the grocery store, take pictures of them, and then leave. What's up with that?
I don't know. I was in a grocery store and saw, you know, a sticker on a banana. And I just thought, oh, man, this is like a ripe canvas, pardon the pun there, for doing, you know, for jokes. And so, yeah, I mean, I just got some sticker paper and printed out, you know, for example, it would say Haas avocados, and then it would say ripe for a window of 30 seconds. Or, you know, there's other ones that, like, a banana has a Chiquita sign and it says awfully phallic, don't you think? You know, it just, you know, just like dumb jokes about fruit. And I did get caught putting one time at a grocery store in my neighborhood.
Uh-oh.
And I was taking a picture of it, and the grocer came up and was like, can I help you? And I was like, just making sure it's a fresh one. And then I ran out. I just kind of like did a speed walk out. I got busted, caught red-handed.
So you've got some slogans for some of the low-hanging fruit, if you will. What about some of the tougher ones? What if I said pomegranate? What would be a slogan for that?
Pomegranate, I would do one that says, I don't know how to eat me either. I think I cannot figure out how to eat a pomegranate. I've tried, but I think that is the toughest thing.
That makes two of us. What about rutabaga? This is one that Halima and I couldn't actually agree on what a rutabaga actually
right,
was before this interview.
I essentially thought a rutabaga was an eggplant. I recently found out that it is not.
I think it's like a beet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is purplish. I think I did one for rutabaga, a similar fruit, where it was, never heard of me? You're about to get 30 pounds of me from your CSA. Because I think that's generally how it goes. It's like, what is kohlrabi? Well, it doesn't matter. You're going to get a huge basket full from your CSA delivery that week. So pretty specific joke, but that's how I felt about it.
So you've got Found Footage Festival is going to be Volume 8, coming up with a new tour. What's going to be new this time around? What can we look forward to?
We finally did something with all the religious videos we found over the years. So we did a montage called 101 Jesuses. And it's exactly what it sounds like. This took us months to put together. This is our Sistine Chapel, so we're proud of that. And just the usual exercise videos and training videos and weird home movies and other artifacts we found on the road last year.
And I understand that you also inherited Dave Letterman's VHS collection when he retired from a show a couple of years back. Did you find anything interesting in there, and how did that come about?
Oh, man, it's so good. Well, I used to work at the Letterman Show. I worked there for about 5 years, and I was the head researcher on the show. So I would try to find old embarrassing footage of celebrities when they were on. And so there's a lot of VHS tapes in the archives from that. But also, there's a regular bit on the show called Dave's Video Collection, where the writers would find tapes for Dave to hold up, and he'd talk a little bit about them and show a few seconds from them. And so when the show was ending, some friends I still have at the show called up and were like, hey, would you want Dave's entire video collection? These are going to go in a dumpster. And, I mean, before I could hang up the phone, I was in the car driving to the Ed Sullivan Theater to load up as many as I could. And there's a video about ferrets giving birth. There's a Mickey Rooney How to Act video where he's just becoming a little unhinged. There's Pete Rose baseball video where none of what he says makes sense. There's one called Nude Cigar Smoking. So let that one sit in for a second. There's one about how to raise goats. I don't know where all these came from, but it was this incredible archive. So, we spent months digging through all these and could probably do like a 5-part series, but I kind of have a best of montage cut together for Volume 8 of our tour.
Yeah, unfortunately, I did see the ferret birthing video this morning, and that was probably something.
Sorry.
And it was in the montage, so it kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think I would have clicked specifically on ferrets giving birth, but because it came right after, you know, like the Pete Rose baseball advice thing, I wasn't really expecting it, but it made my day interesting.
Well, we're not above ambushing people with footage like that, so I think exactly what we wanted to happened on that.
And before we let you go, any other projects or anything that you're working on that we should know about? Or should we be keeping an eye on your social media pages for any interesting stuff that you've got coming up?
Well, I've been really trying to find boy band T-shirts to put on my dad. But
that's
the problem is they're all not adult male sized. So that project stalled. But Found Footage Festival is going to be playing the Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year for the first time. So the entire month of August will be there. It's the biggest arts festival in the world, and it'll be interesting. We'll be doing the show every day for a month. So that'll be a first for us. Pretty excited.
All right. Well, Nick, thanks so much for entertaining us today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Imagine, like, meeting him for the first time and be like, what do you do for a living? How would he answer that question?
And, I mean, have you looked at this guy's Facebook page at all?
I haven't, but I am super into the idea of seeing his mom and band t-shirts. I'm very much a fan of making your parents, like, the stars of your jokes.
So Nick talked a lot about pranks that he's played. Have you ever played, like, a really good prank on somebody? Or, I mean, do you like playing pranks on people?
No, absolutely not. I am too lazy. I make tea because I'm too lazy to put coffee grounds in the coffee maker.
Okay.
Yeah. I am a spectator. Nick grew up in a small town. He had the opportunity to be bored.
Mm.
I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago.
Mm.
So our pranks.
That stuff.
Yeah. There was, like, too much going on. I remember this one time. I don't know. Someone was babysitting me and my friends. We made up this game called Lotion Potion. And we were basically 11 or 12 years old. And we wanted to create our own lotion. So we took everything we found in the bathroom. Yeah, I was basically trying to pickle myself at 11 so I would be preserved until 100. that's what the goal was here. So we took shampoo, conditioner, shaving cream, actual lotion, mixed it with, like, astringent and God knows what.
Oh, my God.
And my friends just put it on themselves. They were fine. And I put it on, too. I broke out into hives.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, your pediatrician mother must have wanted to kill you.
No, she just, like, didn't care because she sees kids, like, stuff up their nose and, like, ears and butt, like, every day. So she's like, okay, my kid's just as stupid as everyone else's. Yeah.
Okay.
I really want to see his mom in heavy metal t-shirts.
Yeah, and I definitely want to check out Found Footage Festival 8 when it rolls through town next.
Well, for more from Nick Prewer, go to WPR.org/next.
And coming up, we'll hear from Milwaukee-based musician Lex Allen.
You're listening to Entertain Us here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Times I don't do everything right. See, I'm losing a piece of myself because I'm wondering what everyone else thinks.
Lex Allen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, fabulous. I got to both of you. Both of you are pretty fabulous.
Thanks. So, Lex, I want to learn a little bit more about what it was like growing up in Milwaukee for you and if that's influenced your music and your work.
It definitely has. So I'm born and raised here in Milwaukee. Grew up all over the city, so South Side, living in very, like, low socioeconomic areas. I grew up really fast.
What do you mean?
Well, I grew up really fast in a way that I was, like, we knew how to catch the city bus all over by the age of 9. My mother always made sure to raise, like, she raised some really independent kids. And, like, you know, people always say, like, oh, money can't buy you happiness. It's, like, very true. Because we were poor, but we were just, like, so rich in family and so rich in care for each other and knowing that the situation was only temporary, so.
What you're saying is kind of reminding me of your song, This Is Our Year, which sounds so, like, celebratory. Like, hey, we just did really well for ourselves. Does this have any connection to that feeling?
It's just like, because it's all changing. You have to be able to maneuver with life. And there's Mel Robbins. She is a motivational speaker. And I came across her TED Talk, and listening to this, like, kind of blew my mind on and stopped me from limiting myself. So she has this rule. Y'all ready for this?
Mm-hmm. We're
okay.
Ready for you.
You ready, Chris?
I'm ready for it.
For some hashtag real talk. Yeah.
Hashtag real, right. So it's called, she has this called the 5-second rule. And she says, in 5 seconds, if you have the urge to, like, talk to, you see a stranger on the street and, like, you feel inclined to talk to them, she was like, you act in 5 seconds and be like, oh, hello, introduce yourself, because those experiences will often, like, lead to unexpected, like, relationships. And even with, like, ideas, like, oh, man, like, that'd be so dope. And then we just, like, stop ourselves, like, no, that's kind of dumb. That's stupid. Like, if you live like this, like, I don't know, blah, blah. She helps you blow through all that in five. She's like, 5 seconds, write it down. You know, 5 seconds, introduce yourself. You know, get those engines revving.
Don't stop. Take me. This is our year, this is our year. This is our year, this is our year. This is our year, this is our year. And no one can take that away.
Well, I mean, talking about new experiences, it seems like your music has evolved and it's taking on a new direction, especially with how personal it seems to be getting. And maybe that's what you're talking about here. And in your video for Cream and Sugar, you show yourself kind of waking up in the morning and wearing makeup and mm-hmm. wearing high heels. I mean, what was it like to share that part of yourself with people?
Oh, God. It was probably one of the most freeing experiences to be able to be around all my friends, too, who express themselves on a daily basis. And it was being around them, actually, just like, well, why don't I just completely show myself, you know? And walking in high heels is not easy, Halima. Mm-hmm. I was like,
I still don't do it. I've already broken an ankle. I'm not doing it anymore.
And dancing, too. My legs never felt better than the next day. But, yeah, you have to be able to express yourself freely. I feel like that's the only way people can see that it's okay to be themselves. If you take that first step, because I have a lot of LGBT brothers and sisters, mm-hmm. Like in my family, I come from a family of 11. So I have like people around me who support that, who are just like, be yourself. Like, we always knew that you were like hella creative. Like, I would take my mom's curtains as a kid and I would like make like designs and stuff, and I would put on shows in our living room, and I would make routines like the Spice Girl routines with my sisters and brothers, mm-hmm. and I was just like, no, I'm Scary Spice today. Okay, you can be Ginger. You messed up. You're Ginger today. You're Ginger right now.
Sugar, honey, iced tea. You are everything that's sweet. Dip you in my coffee. You're the best kind of morning treat.
It sounds like some of the people who are really influential in your life in that way is the creative group that you're part of, New Age Narcissism. What are the different talents that come under New Age Narcissism and the different skill sets there?
Oh, gosh. Producers, songwriters, choreographers, videographers, photographers. There's everything you need in-house, and it works so beautifully. Because everyone is themselves, and I think that's the beauty of it. So it allows creative freedom, because no idea is shot down, and no idea is like, oh, this is the best thing ever. It's very open and honest, creative expression. Mm-hmm. That is why I feel I was able to wear stilettos on a table and dance around my friends. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to wear crop tops all summer. Okay, go ahead and do that. You know, it definitely helped me find myself, if you will. Because mm-hmm. you're around people who are finding themselves, too, and in such a beautiful way. Artistically, personally, being able to completely express myself and having that backing and having that brotherhood, sisterhood, helps you unlock, like I say, unlock those little passageways in yourself. And they definitely did that. Much respect to all of them.
If you could put words on it, how would you describe the version of yourself that came out in Cream and Sugar?
It is very Ricky Sparkle. That's my alter ego. My alter ego. Animated, like happy, just, I can just put it into words, like supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. That is it.
You talk a lot about people who care about you, and I want to talk about your mom, who recently passed away, mm-hmm. And you wrote the song Mama's Boy, which was inspired by her. Can you talk about that song?
Oh, man. Pamela Renee, she's the best lady in the world. It was one of the hardest studio experiences I've ever had in my life. I was out in LA at the Howard Benson Studios, and it was one of the most vulnerable experiences I've ever had in my life, because I was bawling my eyes out. And yeah, letting go of that was hard, because you know, you don't want to. Excuse me.
No, take your time.
I miss you always worrying about me, reminding me my phone bill ain't free. I miss the payments just so you would call me, to hear your voice like a phoenix from the ashes. You carried me home in your eyes.
like letting it go. It just felt like, oh, shiitake mushrooms. It was like letting it go.
That was smooth. I liked that.
Like letting it go just like felt like it was like real that she wasn't here anymore.
Yeah.
But I feel it every day.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was definitely like one of the biggest motivators. And not just to me. Like there are people coming up to me on the street like, your mom, like I couldn't pay like my rent on time and she gave me $100. And like, I'm just like, what? I'm like, you know, but that was my mother, mm-hmm. you know, like she was the mother to all, like, you know, I would have friends whose parents like would kick them out of their house for being gay. And like they stayed with us, you know, my best friend stayed with us for 6 months. And she was just that person to not judge. And that's where I learned it from, like to not judge a person. A person, every person just needs that one person to like show them and help them unlock something. And she was that person for many. And I respect her beyond, beyond this world. I'll always be a mama's boy. You're the one I'm singing for. I'll always be a mama's boy. Mama's boy.
Mama's boy. You've talked about wanting to work more with other LGBT artists in the future. Tell me about that. What's that goal like?
Well, it's already in the works. Like, Taj is one of my favorite female MCs in Milwaukee. Like, you have a phone call. Hold on.
Yeah, we can
It isn't my phone. It's the studio phone.
That's not even your fault. That's ours. Okay. Just pick it up and hang up.
I did.
That's usually what I do.
I like
too.
It. Leave that in there. Don't take that out. That's funny.
This makes great radio.
Anything can happen.
Yes, you were talking about your goal to help other LGBT artists kind of find their voice.
Yeah, it's just like they're seeing that it's okay. And I think that... Hold on, I'm going to answer.
Oh, shiitake mushrooms right there.
Shiitake mushrooms. Hello? We're doing a radio interview right now.
Oh, good God.
Okay. All right, thank you. Who am I speaking with? All right, bye-bye. Oh, my
goodness. Do you want a job here, Lex?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, that was perfect.
Oh, my God. I'll just come out guest host with y'all one day.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
All right.
It's like, how do I segue back into this? So, no, that's, like, a really big goal, and I think they're seeing that it's okay to be yourself on stage and not care. Like, doesn't matter I'm LGBT, but I'm an artist. One of my biggest goals this year is to put on, like, an LGBT showcase. And then just helping them find studio space. You know, just like little stuff. Like, you know, I do photography. Like, what do you need done? How can I help you be the artist you want to be?
Cool.
We're just going to have some fun. We're going to have some fun. A lot of surprises.
Well, Lex, thank you so much for joining us today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me. Halima and Chris.
That was beautiful.
Okay, now I'm going to dial up my voicemail message.
That is really funny. You're the second person. They're like, I want you to do my voicemail. Like,
you can make a small business out of this, Lex.
And now the next part of my career begins. Voicemails.
All right.
Oh, my God.
Well,
yes.
Lex, thanks for coming into the studio.
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Lex Allen is a Milwaukee-based musician and a member of the creative group New Age Narcissism. We should really check out his show sometime, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. And that way I can corner him and get him to do my voicemail message.
Well, after the break, we'll sit down with a Madison teacher turned stand-up comic.
We'll also talk about the 80s with a TV critic who digs into last summer's hit TV show Stranger Things.
We'll have to keep the lights on for Chris during that one while he's crying in the bathroom.
I'm already starting to cry.
For more from Entertainers, visit us at WPR.org/next. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. My cream and sugar. Chris Molina.
Halima Shaw.
You like sci-fi.
Yes, and this kind of comes back to a discussion that you and I had maybe a couple weeks ago. You remember what we were talking about?
Yes, I'm a sci-fi hater.
You were a sci-fi hater. I'm a sci-fi lover. What I don't love so much is horror.
I can handle horror as long as there's a plot line, but that brings me to my next point. I was super into Stranger Things.
And see, I was not into Stranger Things. I liked where the plot was going, but I'm going to be totally honest with you. I got two episodes in. I was freaking out. What was the appeal to you?
So I will say that I watched Stranger Things, and then I went out at midnight to take the trash out, and I live in an early 20th century home, and there were weird noises coming from my house, and I still want to go back and watch it. It was like a throwback to the 80s, an era that I personally can't recall, but I thought it was great. I thought it was so good. I thought the characters were so real. It makes you feel nostalgic whether or not you were around in the 80s.
We're going to need some outside help here determining, is this a show worth watching or not? Jen Chaney is here with us. She is the TV columnist at Vulture. Hey, Jen, thanks for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
So tell us a little bit about your feelings on Stranger Things. Did you like the show?
I did like the show. And it's really interesting to hear you say that even though you don't remember the 80s, it made you feel nostalgic for it in a way.
Yeah, it totally did.
Because I think a lot of people had that response. And I remember the 80s very well, as I betray my age. and what appealed to me about it was the period piece aspect of it, because I remember that era well, and because it was really evoking a lot of the films that came out around that time period. They specifically call out Poltergeist, but there are things in there that echo E.T. and that echo John Carpenter's work and other things. And there was no more influential movie on me at a young age than E.T. and Poltergeist. I saw them like very close to each other. They came out the same summer. So to have something that was evoking that just immediately struck a chord with me. But I wasn't sure it would strike a chord with people who were younger because, as you said, you don't necessarily remember that or have that connection. So I was kind of gratified to see that people responded to it regardless. And I think it is a period piece. There's no question about it. I mean, what I had written in my original review was that, you know, it felt like you weren't just watching some show on Netflix. It was like something from an old VHS tape that somebody secretly uploaded to Netflix. And you're like, oh, I just found this. You know, it had that kind of feeling about it. And I think what I like about Stranger Things is that there was a sense of, for lack of a better way of putting it, magical realism, where it wasn't the kind of sci-fi where you go to some other planet that looks completely different from what you were used to. It was sci-fi intruding on a situation that's recognizable, especially if you're a kid, which is sort of typical suburban family life. And I love stories like that.
Something is coming. Something angry. Hungry for your blood. It is almost here.
What is it?
It's the Thessal Hydra, I'm telling you.
It's not the Thessal Hydra.
I'm telling you, it's the Thessal Hydra.
The Thessal Hydra!
Ugh! Damn it!
It roars in anger! Wheel your action!
What should I do?
Fireball him!
Four damage!
Direct hit! Wheel the watch's fireball hits the Thessal Hydra! It makes a vein ball! And then it crumbles to the ground! Its claw hand reaches for you one last time, and yeah!
Yeah, I definitely think that was why it appealed to me, because when I start a sci-fi movie and it's immediately on another planet, I'm like, you've lost me. I don't see myself in this location anytime soon. Even if I had the option of going to space, I don't know if I would. But I really did feel like I was watching a period piece, almost in a way that reminded me of watching Mad Men.
Right. And, you know, when you mentioned Mad Men, I think one of the reasons Mad Men was so absorbing, there are many reasons, but the production design on that show was so evocative. And I think Stranger Things, the production design team did a really great job in the same way. Like even the phone in Winona Ryder's house, a yellow rotary phone. I was like, that phone was in my kitchen when I was growing up. And certainly there's a scene where Winona Ryder's character is talking to Will, the boy who gets abducted, but it's before he gets abducted. It's like a flashback. And she's remembering talking to him about going to see Poltergeist. And as I mentioned, that was a really formative movie moment for me personally. And she holds up even the movie ticket, I think, that she had bought.
So there's something in Stranger Things in particular that you don't often see and some of the other modern sci-fi works. And that's like this theme of free-range childhood. And I think that was something that a lot of people reacted to, because it's basically about these three or four boys who get on their bikes and they just go and they kind of take their fate into their own hands. Is that something that we might see make a comeback for real-life kids?
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because if you go back and you look at, you know, a lot of the movies from that era, like E.T., like The Goonies, you know, you always see that kind of imagery of these kids just rolling off on their bikes and, and going off and having these adventures. And even Super 8, the J.J. Abrams movie that came out that was, again, evoking the 70s and early 80s period. You saw that, too. And when I talked to Millie Bobby Brown, who's one of the child actors who's in Stranger Things, she plays 11. When I asked her, you know, what, when you were pretending to be in the 80s, what felt the strangest to you about that era? And I expected her to say, oh, I couldn't use my phone or something like that. And she said it was that the kids could just go wherever they wanted because my parents don't let me do that.
Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about Eleven's character? She's the little girl who has run away from some institution who the boys stumble upon. And I don't know how to feel about her because she's the only little girl who's a main character, but then she's completely silent.
Mm-hmm.
Should we know better than to do that in 2016, 2017, to have, you know, female star characters, but then they don't have many lines?
Yeah, that's a really great point. I mean, the fact that Eleven doesn't talk, there is a reason for it. And I actually thought Millie Bobby Brown was so powerful that even when she was being silent, I was often more interested in what she was doing than what anybody else in the frame was doing.
Why did they hurt you? I just fell at recess. Mike.
Yeah?
Friends, tell the truth. I was tripped by this mouth breather, Troy, okay?
Mouth breather?
Yeah, you know. A dumb person. A knucklehead.
Knucklehead?
I don't know why I just didn't tell you. Everyone at school knows. I just didn't want you to think I was just such a wastoid, you know?
Mike.
Yeah?
I understand.
Oh. Okay. Cool.
Cool. And I'll say, you know, just even going out on Halloween this year, I saw so many people dressed as Eleven. And I think that spoke to that character really resonating maybe even more than any of the boys did, even though she didn't get to talk.
Well, and speaking of her talking, you did get to speak to Millie Bobby Brown, as you alluded to earlier, and it sounds like the quiet character that she plays on this TV show is very different than kind of the character that she is in real life. Can you talk more about what kind of person she is?
Yeah, I mean, I did one of the early interviews. I feel like now she's become a pro because she's just been making the rounds at award shows and, you know, on all kinds of, you know, late night talk shows and things like that. But I thought she was just lovely to talk to, very bright, very, you know, enthusiastic. I mentioned earlier asking her about things that she responded to from the 80s, and she went on for a while about how she discovered what a record player was from working on the show and then got her own record player. And she just had a really infectious enthusiasm about her that I really appreciated. And I'm happy to see her having so much success.
Wait, she's 12 years old and she's buying vinyl records?
Yeah.
Oh, there's hope for the next generation, I guess.
Are we just living in the age of nostalgia in general? Like, you're seeing 12-year-olds buy vinyl.
I think there is something to that. And I think the internet has changed that. We used to think that nostalgia only worked in 20-year cycles. But I think now, because we can access these any time period we want just by looking around on YouTube or streaming a certain show, I feel like that 20-year cycle thing kind of has been obliterated. I mean, I feel like we've been looking at the 80s again for quite a long time, not just in Stranger Things, but in shows like The Americans, The Goldbergs.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like we have ruptured the space-time continuum, perhaps.
How pumped up are you for the second season of the show, which I believe is coming out fairly soon?
Yeah, it's going to be coming out later this year around Halloween time, which is appropriate, I think.
Sure.
I'm just really curious to see where they go with the story, because at the end of season one of Stranger Things, it was the kind of thing where you thought, well, this could probably be the end of this, because it wasn't clear at all, especially when I was first watching it before it had reached the masses, that there would be a season two. And I thought, well, that's just kind of the end. But they also left some doors open for the plot that I'm curious to see where they go with it. So I'm excited, and I just hope that it lives up to all the excitement that it has generated in the years since it came out.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited too. Jen, thanks for taking my side on this today.
You're welcome. Anytime.
My name is Esteban. I'm from Ecuador. If you don't know how to call people from Ecuador, we're called Ecuadorables.
That was Esteban Tuma. He's a comic based in Madison, and he is here with us now. Esteban, tell me what you do for a day job.
My main thing is I'm a teacher.
Oh, yeah. Tell us about teaching. What do you tell your parents when they ask you what you do?
I do say that I teach.
Okay.
That was kind of like what brought me into doing comedy, because, you know, when you get into teaching, you always think like, oh, I'm going to be doing this like very noble profession, which it is. But then you stand in front of the class and you realize, oh, no, I just really like the attention, you know, just like people looking at me. And
what do you teach?
I teach Espanol. Yes.
Okay.
I also have I also teach a couple of classes, literature classes. But mainly, I mainly work with the World Languages Department at Madison College.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you use elements of comedy when you're trying to get a certain concept across to your students at school?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It works very similarly in the sense that whenever, you know, we go into a specific topic, I would make the same jokes or I would repeat the same things. Mm. And some of these things are horrible jokes. Like I tell my students, whenever I give them a pop quiz, I tell them, this pop quiz is so specific, it's a Fanta quiz. And nobody... And nobody laughs. That is the most generous laugh I had for that joke.
That's the kind of humor that I love. Halima will tell you that I am, like, constantly making puns and dad jokes.
So many puns. Like, I don't know how much longer we can keep working together.
So I'm all on board for that.
Well, you said what brought you to the U.S. was your job.
Well, that's a yes and no.
Okay.
So what brought me to Madison was the job. What brought me to the U.S. was this American girl that has now become my wife.
First thing I'll tell you is I don't believe in marriage. I don't. I feel it's a phony institution. My wife... she agrees. She actually says that marriage eliminates your ability to state your own opinions. And I have to agree. I have to agree. She's here.
We started living together in Ecuador. She was in Ecuador. And then we decided to apply for a master's degree. And we got into the same school. So we came to the United States. Of course, in the middle of that, we got married in Las Vegas. You know, weird road trip we took. But
is that kind of a spur of the moment thing?
It kind of was, because we didn't want to get married. Like, we were like,
oh, we don't need a piece of paper to love each other and be together. And the U.S. government was like, yeah. You do. So we were like, okay, U.S. government. We got married.
Well, you talk a lot about your immigration status in your comedy.
I do.
Has that become more or less funny since we elected a new president?
Oh, my God. I think both, in a way. Some of the jokes I do work a lot better now.
Sometimes you just want to be alone. Sometimes there's drama. Sometimes you wish you could just stay away for 3 months or something. But then, you know, you get home and you're tired. But then you look at her in her eyes. You look at this woman, this other human being, and you think, you are the only reason why I have a green card. So you make it work.
But I also used to have several jokes about illegal immigrants and things like that that people are a lot more sensitive to. And so I used to have this joke about having an idea for a new reality TV show where a beautiful bachelorette has to choose between 10 illegal immigrants. and those that don't get picked deported. And so like it used to crash, and then now it's kind of like a dark joke. And of course, I would tell it like, carefully. But now, like people refuse to laugh to that joke with good reason. You know, it's not a good time for making those jokes. And that's the thing about comedy, is that it responds to the social tensions and the social environment. So, it's as a comic, it's very interesting to measure those things and to see where society's heading.
So your jokes took me on a walk down memory lane, because I grew up in a predominantly Muslim community outside of Chicago. So right outside 9/11, every brown-skinned person's favorite joke was about the TSA and airport security. And you have a joke about this.
Right.
I mean, it's been a while since 9/11, but how do people respond to those jokes about the TSA and going through what you call the YMCA machine?
Last time I flew back home, it happened. I was going through the YMCA machine, and the TSA agent's like, "Sir, I believe we have found something potentially dangerous in your groin area." I was like, "I know." My wife here knows how to activate it. She jumps in and says, "Yeah, it goes off in under a minute."
They still respond very well, because I feel people know how difficult it is. And even people that go through security lines very easily can also relate to how absurd it is.
And you talk a lot about just your ethnic background, too. Like, what is it like to share that with people?
It's fun, because as I was saying before, it's interesting that you have a moral compass in how society responds to certain things. So the stand-up for me is not only like me telling people certain things about myself, but also by the way they react, I learn a lot about other people, about the society.
I'm half Hispanic, half Palestinian, so, you know, I get premier platinum access to all major U.S. airport basements. My passport there right this way.
It's interesting to gauge that reaction, and feeling like sometimes when I mention something about race, just feeling the room kind of like going back and saying like, "Oh, what is he going to say?"
Do you have any jokes that you can share with us right now?
Why did you look at me before you said that?
I don't know, because I had a feeling.
You totally side-eyed me before you asked that question.
Because I just felt like you were going to be the first person to jump on that.
Me?
Yeah.
You want to hear jokes for me? I don't know. Maybe okay. So, I've been thinking about superheroes and how ridiculous it seems that a person gets powers from a radioactive spider or something, because like the spider is the weakest, is like the worst kind of animal to get powers. You know, I like to see like a tiger.
Yeah, or a cheetah.
Right, a cheetah, yeah. Radioactive cheetah or something, you know, like a radioactive bear. So I'm thinking, like, it would be amazing to have a bear that is bitten by a radioactive man. So that would be great. And, like, you know, by day, he's just a regular bear. But by night, you know, he hates his dad or something. Or, you know, his superpowers are opposable thumbs and, like, depression. I don't know.
I think we're onto something here.
Yeah.
Dealing with mortality.
Yeah. On that note, Esteban Tuma, thank you so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.
Chris, were you entertained?
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining.
That did not sound convincing. But you have been listening to a show called Entertain Us, and I am Halima Shah.
And I'm Chris Molina. Was that better?
Yes. I mean, I guess. And as hosts, we were the ones doing all the talking, but a few others were involved in the entertainment, and we're very hashtag blessed for them.
We sure are. Brad Kohlberg seemed to be the guy who was the most stressed out about the whole thing, calling meetings, scribbling notes, and just generally hovering, but in a good way.
Yeah, he was also the one turning all the knobs and making sure everything fits into an hour, minus news breaks, underwriters, station IDs, and Carl Christensen did things too, right?
He did some things, and Adam Friedrich did some stuff too, but really, this show is about entertaining you. So, thanks for listening.
Entertain Us is a production of WPR Next. For more, visit us at WPR.org/next. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.